The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest star Michelle McAloon, who we respect as a woman. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Yes, good morning and welcome one and all to this new week of Turley Frequencies here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. And today we kick off the week looking to the stars. We have Brother Robert Mack from the Vatican Observatory who will be joining us in the next segment to talk all things astronomical. We look to heaven at the top of the hour when we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, when we pray together for one another, as well as together as one body in Christ. Whatever your need, we can pray for that today on this show. Prayer requests can be texted to me on 251-928-2111. Lines are open right now. Story time today is a real-life thriller. A condemned woman who wants to confess all to a certain priest, but can he be found in time before she goes to the gallows? Well, you're going to have to stick around for the final segment to find out more. Okay, if this sounds like a show for you, then you better buckle up, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. Yes, welcome to Monday here on Archangel Radio. And I don't know about you, but every time I turn the radio on, the news seems to just get more depressingly awful in every single sense, whether it's news about the world, about the church in the world, about humanity itself and some of the ways in which we all treat each other. It just gets worse and worse and worse. And it's Monday morning when you're probably commuting to work, or maybe you're sitting at home getting ready for the week in whatever way it is, or maybe you've just dropped the children off at school and you're coming back home, or maybe you're doing something nice, maybe you're working at the weekend and you're just taking some time to exercise on a Monday morning, or perhaps you're lying in bed listening to this, just relaxing before you get up. That's fine. I want to tell you a couple of stories, real-life news items, which really I found uplifting, but for very different reasons. The first involves a 76-year-old. 76 is very young compared to 96. 76-year-old student who finally graduated with his PhD in philosophy, having started it 50 years ago. Now, I don't know about you, but I have known quite a few people who have started PhDs. I've known one or two that have completed PhDs, and I know a lot of people who are in the bogged down somewhere in a PhD trying to complete it after many, many years. It's not for the faint-hearted. I wouldn't dream of doing it myself. It's not my cup of tea, as we say over here. But I take my hat off to anybody who manages to complete a PhD. It is the absolute summit of whatever that area of study that you have spent many, many years on. So this newly graduated doctor is called Nick Axton, and he's from England, and he started his PhD 50 years ago, right? He had a prestigious Fulbright scholarship at the University of Pittsburgh. And he started his PhD, no doubt, a young man then and with full of hopes and enthusiasms. But after 5 years, he had to return to the UK, and he just couldn't juggle work and study and all the rest of it. So the thing lay in the cupboard, I guess, the beginnings of his PhD. Anyway, 7 years ago, he decided at the ripe old age of 69 to recommence his studies in PhD, which I have to say, and it's a subject I didn't even know existed. It's called mathematical sociology. It's very interesting. In the article I read about him, he said that, well, it was the 1960s, and revolution was in the air. It was the time of student sit-downs, the Vietnam War, and all the rest of it. And the world seemed to be going through a change, which in retrospect is absolutely right. It did go through a massive change in the late 60s. And why he wanted to study this really was to understand human behavior based on the values that each person holds. Interesting, right? So he's looking at behavioral psychology in a sense based upon that by which we believe. I think this is a very, very interesting subject now that Dr. Exton has alerted me to it, because I think it's very interesting to think about how Christians behave as a group and individually based on what we believe. But maybe the more amusing thing about the whole article was what he said upon graduating. He said, quotes, "I loved being a student again at Bristol University. All of the other philosophy graduates were around 23 years old, but they accepted me as one of their own." I love that. I love the idea of a 76-year-old in the midst of these 23-year-olds, pen in hand or computer in hand, whatever it is these days, asking questions, writing notes and all the rest of it. Listen, why did I bring it up? Well, what I'm saying is you're never too late. Whatever your dreams are, whatever your hopes are, there is never too late a moment to live them and to realize those dreams. We live in a society which is very youth orientated, but guess what? It always has been. And what it tells you is your life's over by 30, by 40, by 50, whatever. It's not true. The Lord has given us all one life. One life. And different points of the day, different points of that one life, we will engage in different ways for different things as long as it's His will. Think of that parable that our Lord told about the workers. Do you remember the workers in the vineyard? And some of them came early, some of them came in the middle, some of them came at the 11th hour. And the ones that came later, they are early. They said, why are we all getting paid the same? Well, that's the way God sometimes works it all out, that we all get paid at different times. And sometimes, such as this gentleman, it's at the end of our life. So don't give up. Monday morning, you might be thinking, oh, what's the point? There's always a point. Now, the next story which cheered me up was this one. It was about a Lebanese man who builds a wind turbine from recycled plastic. Why? So he could produce electricity for his family and his neighbors. Yes, in Lebanon's windy northwest corner in Agkar, a literature student taught himself engineering and how to build a wind turbine on his grandmother's roof. And how did he teach himself? Well, he taught himself off YouTube videos. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I've taught myself some things off YouTube videos. I'm sure you have. YouTube videos are a wonderful source of information for, you know, if you need the plumbing done, or you need to work out how do I do this, how do I do that, check it out on YouTube. You'd be amazed what's there. Now, Lebanon has a major problem because a lot of the government-supplied electricity is a little bit hit and miss. And that's why this young man, who's 25, decided to use water drums, steel beams, and a cartwheel to build a wind turbine to take advantage of the wind, because he hadn't got the ability or the money to pay for the sun reflector things that collect the sun and generate electricity. So instead, he decided that it was time to use the wind. And he did. So the solar panels were not a choice for this man, and they could only be used at certain times of the day. This cures the problem, and now he, his neighbors, and his family have him down as a hero. And on the subject of college dropouts, this young man had been a French literature student, but he dropped out of university when hyperinflation made it impossible for him to continue paying his fees. I think he should go back and doing engineering. What do you think? Now, what's the moral of this story? Well, it's kind of like there's always a solution, right? There's always a way around our problems, and sometimes we need just to apply our minds. Now, it comes very timely, this story, because the other day in church, a man came up to me who I know. He had seen me praying at a statue to St. Joseph. And he said, have you got a devotion to St. Joseph? I said, sure. I said, we're in the middle of the novena to him. You know, we're all praying to him and the run up to his feast day. And he said, well, I want to tell you about something St. Joseph did for me. I said, sure, I'm all ears. And he whipped out his phone and he said, St. Joseph helped me build the shed at the, in the back garden. And he started switching his phone on, looking for photographs. And I was thinking, oh, this will be interesting. So soon. And he said to me, I had no idea what I was doing. And I thought, this is going to be really interesting. What sort of shed is St. Joseph going to devise at the bottom of the garden, you know, especially with somebody like myself who has no skills in this department? As he was saying, he's got no ability to do this, but St. Joseph helped him. So anyway, he flicked on his camera, or the camera bit of his phone, showed me some photographs, and there it was. The shed that St. Joseph and he had built. And you know what? It was amazing. It was incredible. It was this incredible. And there's photographs and film of it both inside and externally. And I said to him, are you telling me that with no training, no knowledge, but with the prayers to St. Joseph, you created this? He said, yeah. He said, I can't believe it myself. I said, how did you do it? He said, every time I started working, I said, St. Joseph, you be my hands. St. Joseph, you help me. So listen, we're still praying to St. Joseph. If you're doing the novena like I am, keep it up. Let's keep aiming for next Sunday stroke Monday. It falls on a Monday this year. We're praying to St. Joseph, and we're expecting many, many good things. And also this month, remember, is dedicated to St. Joseph. So we keep him very much in mind. And you know, those words have been echoing in my mind all weekend. I ask St. Joseph to be my hands. So maybe today, let's ask St. Joseph to be our hands in whatever it is that we need to do. He's a man of many, many talents, not just building sheds. So I hope that was of some interest to you, that little run through some good news. And remember, if there's anything I say on this show that you want to comment on or discuss, you can do. You call me on 888-928-0881. Or if you prefer to text in, text your thoughts, 251-928-2111. Okay. So, now there was another story that I saw about a 80-year-old, which really intrigued me. But I may not have time for today. We shall see. Let's see if anybody calls in on 888-928-0881. I will take your call and interrupt this story, but otherwise, let's keep going. So this story is entitled, Student Pays $270,000 so an 80-year-old janitor can retire from a Texas high school. Now, we have lived, we were talking about earlier the world being orientated towards young people and what have you. One of the other misconceptions is that people always assume that older people are nicer than the younger people, that younger people are just selfish, have no interest in other people, and that older people are really the ones where all the niceness of the world reside. Well, this story from Texas just proves the opposite, and actually proves something that I think we always knew, that I think younger people in particular have bigger hearts sometimes because they're not so encumbered with things, right? They haven't started paying mortgages. They haven't started doing whatever they need to do. So these high school seniors managed to secure $250,000 for their 80-year-old janitor. Now, why did they do this? Well, the reason they did it was because this 80-year-old, who goes by the name of Mr. James, I'm not sure if that's his real name or whether he used an alias to spare his blushes, but he had retired. The poor man had retired from his work and had been enjoying his retirement when various circumstances had meant that economically it wasn't viable for him and he had to return to the workplace. Now, I don't know about you, but at 80 years old, having to return to the workplace must have been a real shock to him, right? His rent went up by $400. Now, this isn't unusual. There's been a lot of economic change with gas and bills and the whole backwash from the days of the pandemic, etc. So this poor man had no choice. I mean, it wasn't that he thought, I'll go back to work because I like to interact with people or I'd like something to do during the day. It was more a case of, I need to be able to pay the rent. So off he goes back to being a janitor in this school. Hello. And then he... there because we have a call. Who have we got on the line and where are you calling from?
Hey, Kevin, it's your correspondent over here from San Francisco, man. It's Dave. How's it going?
Dave, what do you think of this story about these kids in Kalisburg High School in Texas who raised $250,000 for their 80-year-old janitor so he could go back to his retirement? What do you think of that?
Hey, man, that's touching right there. If that isn't, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you know, encapsulate the human spirit and what we should all, you know, strive to be like. That's what it's all about, man. You know, not thinking about yourself. You know what I mean? There's so many selfish people walking around, Nancy Pelosi. You know what I mean, Kevin?
I do.
You know, I like your other story, man. You were talking about some guy who's, I don't know how old, like 76 years old, and wanted to go back to school. Man, you know, Kevin, you make this station, man. You guys, you're like inspiring me, man. Cause I think I may go back to school in one of the community colleges here, man.
Well, what would you study, Dave?
I don't know. Maybe like, you know, herb plant life or something like that, or like, you know, I've always had an interest in that and growing things, man. I just think that's so neat. And, you know, there's so many medicinal purposes, you know, for plants. And I don't know, I always used to watch, you know, Bob Ross. You know, I always wanted to paint. I think it's just, man, it's just freeing. You know what I mean? It's like happy little things. That's what I want to paint, man. You know, just happy little things, you know,
absolutely,
on just a piece of paper canvas. You know, you guys talk a lot about, you know, art, you know, and your show and your faith and everything, man. And just, that's what it's about. God gave us this, man. God gave us this earth, you know, so we can, like, go and prosper and create, you know. Like, here's the canvas, man. I can give you everything you need. Just like go and take advantage of it, man. Go grab a paintbrush. Go, you know, plant something, man. Grow and prosper. You know what I'm saying?
I do, Dave. What sort of painting would you like to do? Are you a portrait painter, landscape, house painter?
Yeah,
what is it that you'd like to do?
Yeah, I like portrait painting, man. You know, I don't know. Just like, I just want to paint, you know, like pictures of the beach and, you know, put some birds and stuff. Maybe a little stick figure of me, you know, at the beach, mm-hmm, or something like that.
Like Van Gogh or something, or Lowry or one of these people.
Well, I'm not going to go that far as saying I'm as good as him, but or even remotely close to that. But, you know, I nor would I want to cut my ear off. But, you know, I mean, like,
no.
I would definitely, you know, I would definitely paint something, you know, like that, just kind of off the beaten path, like, what were you thinking, Dave, when you drove, you know, when you do this? I'm like, I don't know. I, you know, I have my ear cut off, and no, I'm just kidding. Like, but you know what I mean? Like I just draw something like this that speaks to me, man, and speaks to somebody else, and maybe that inspires them, man. I think that's what we're here to do. You know what I mean? Just give life and passion to other people.
I think you're right, but also I think, isn't it what, I mean, that sort of creative endeavor, isn't that what makes us human? You know, it sets us apart from animals and AI and all the rest of it. Something that's very human, which is a desire to create something which is just beautiful and good and pleasant, helps the world be better.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Amen to that, as you guys say. And artificial idiots, they can't paint what I paint. They can't do what Dave is doing, man. Good luck. Can never replicate what Dave is doing, man. Or what you guys are doing on your show, man.
Well, absolutely, Dave. But I love the artificial idiots. I've used it. I've used it a number of times now. So it's become Dave's catchphrase, Dave's view of the 21st century, the century of artificial idiots. And I think there's something in that, Dave.
Well, I'm looking for the check in the mail, you know.
Well, you know, our mailer out is artificial intelligence, so you're never going to get it because you've insulted them. So, we're only joking, Dave. Sure. Listen, Dave, we're going to have to go for a break. It's always good to speak to you on a Monday morning. You cheer me up. You cheer our listeners up with your great spirit. And that's the main thing, to keep it going, to keep yourself in a positive state of mind on this Monday.
Amen.
And we wish that you have a lovely week. And listen, call again next week. Tell us how you get on with your painting. Let me know what you've been painting and why. That's great. Okay, listen, when we come back, we're going to be painting the skies. We're going to be talking about planets, about meteorites, about asteroids, and about all that good stuff with Brother Robert Mack from the Vatican Observatory. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. To the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Now, many of you will have read in the Psalms that wonderful, I think it's Psalm 19, getting my view of files back, but which says that the heavens show forth the glory of God and the firmament declareth the work of his hands. Now, I'm sure our next guest agrees completely with that statement because he is Brother Robert Mack, who is a member of the U.S. Central and Southern Province of the Society of Jesus, better known to us as Jesuits. Brother Robert was born in Fort Worth, Texas in 1974, and then he went on to study physics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and the Washington University in St. Louis. After that, he taught at Bowling Green State University in Ohio before entering the Society of Jesus in 2001. Today, Brother Robert is working at the Vatican Observatory, something he's done since July 2013. And there, his specialism, he studies meteorites, the physical properties of those things in the observatory's meteorite laboratory. And in August 2014, Brother Robert became the curator of the Vatican collection of 1,200 meteorite specimens. And he joins me down the line this morning. Brother Robert, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for getting up so early to join us here. I presume you're in Arizona at the observatory, are you?
Yes, I am in Arizona at the moment, yes.
That's wonderful. Listen, for anybody who's listening who may, you know, maybe not familiar, or maybe a younger person who's not familiar with what a meteorite is, do you want to just explain, Brother Robert, what it is? Why is it so important that we study these?
Meteorites are basically rocks from outer space. So anything that comes from outside the Earth and arrives at the Earth intact enough that we can go and collect it. And that's the important thing. This is basically a free sample return mission, stuff actually coming from space that we can collect it. And most of these meteorites are remnants of asteroids. And a large number of them are very, very, very old, 4.5 billion years old. They go back to the very early days of the solar system. So by studying these, we can really kind of look back in time to those early days of the solar system to try to understand better how our solar system formed.
So is it a little bit too poetic, Brother Robert, to say that they're kind of scientific snapshots of the beginnings of the universe?
They are, well, not the beginnings of the universe, the beginnings of our solar system, the sun and the planets. So our solar system is one of many billions and billions of solar systems out there. But our solar system is 4.5 billion years old. The universe itself is somewhere on the order of 14 billion years old. So our sun and the planets are much younger than the universe itself. But we do have, it's sort of a snapshot of the early solar system, but it's kind of a blurry snapshot in the sense that There's still a lot that has happened after these things were formed that is also recorded in there. So it's sort of a record of all of that history.
And so meteorites come from asteroids, or is it vice versa?
Yeah, the meteorites come from asteroids, the remnants of asteroids. Not all of them. Some of them are actually pieces of, for instance, Mars or the Moon. So at some point in the deep history, something hit the surface of the Moon or hit the surface of Mars with enough energy to knock material off into space. And the stuff floats around in space for a while until eventually it comes to the Earth. But most of the meteorites are asteroids, are from asteroids.
So in your in the observatory's meteorite laboratory, you have these samples, some of which have come directly from the Moon?
Yes, we do have some specimens. Well, we have one specimen in particular that's really special. It's not actually a meteorite. It's what I call a field specimen. It was actually collected by human beings on the surface of the Moon in the Apollo 17 program. And it was given to the Vatican as part of their goodwill exchange program, where they donated one specimen to each country that they had good diplomatic relations with, including the Vatican.
Am I right in thinking, was that the final mission, Apollo 17?
Yes, Apollo 17 was the last mission, 1972. And unfortunately, no human being has ever been back to the Moon since.
Well, not yet. I know that you know that there are lots of plans. We had on the chief historian from NASA, whose name escapes me this morning, but he was talking about, is it Artemis, the idea of returning to the Moon and the stars?
Yes, so the Artemis mission recently actually went out to lunar orbit and took some photos from the far side of the Moon. So, and that is, it was not occupied by any people, except I believe there was a mannequin on there. But it is rated that a person could have been on that craft.
Yes. I mean, are you old enough to get excited about all of this in the sense that I can still remember the excitement of the 1970s around space travel. And when I was growing up, it was anticipated that by now people would be living in space and people would be traveling backwards and forwards in the same way that people travel from Europe to the United States on planes. It was that sort of expectation. Yet none of it came to pass to the point now where I think there's probably a generation that, and I include myself in this, that feel a little bit sort of jaded by this, thinking there's a lot of talk about this, but I'm not really sure it's going to happen. Do you have any views on that?
I certainly hope at some point human exploration of space really takes off. And I think we are at a point right now where people are starting to think about it more seriously than they had been in the last decade or two. I'm quite excited. I am a big fan of the Apollo missions. I unfortunately had not been born until after the last mission, but I've really researched quite a bit about the missions, and I find it very fascinating, and it was a very exciting time. I do sort of wish I had been around for that, but I'm excited about the possibilities now as well.
Yes, I mean you're probably also aware, but I better just introduce you again. This is Brother Robert Mack, who's talking to me from the Vatican Observatory. He's got up very early this morning in Arizona to talk to us here on the Turley Frequency. And Brother Mack is one of he's the specialist in meteorites. If you have any questions for him on meteorites, asteroids, or anything to do with space, feel free to give us a ring, 888-928-0881, or text me on 251-928-2111. Happy to pose your questions.
I want to just give one minor correction here. It's Mackie is my last name.
Oh, forgive me, Mackie. Yes. Is that a Scottish name or an Irish name, Mackie?
It's actually German.
Oh, even there you go. That's what's throwing me, because I think in Irish or Scottish, we would just the E would be silent. So that's what's throwing me. Forgive me. It's Brother Robert Mackie speaking to us today from the Vatican Observatory in Arizona. There's a number of people, though, since the Apollo and even around the Apollo missions. I remember sitting in class discussing with our religion class with our resident priest, talking about the morality of spending so much money on moon missions when even by the 1970s there was so much inequality and global poverty and all the rest of it. And I remember there was quite a fierce debate even then in the late 70s as to whether this was a good use of resources. Brother Robert, what would you say to people like that, or do you have a view on that?
I have a very complicated view on that, and I don't know if I can get into all the details here, but I think it is very important that we do take the time and spend the resources to address global issues. But at the same time, there is so much more to life and to understanding who we are and where we came from than simply filling our bellies. So it's a both and situation. We do need to focus on dealing with world problems, poverty in particular, making sure people are well fed, but we need to feed them spiritually as well. And that involves exploration, that involves learning about this great universe that God created. And we can't deny one for the sake of the other, simply because there's so much to do. So it is, as I said, it's a very complicated answer. We can't ignore one for the sake of the other, I think is my short answer there.
And I mean, I suppose what you're also saying, in a sense, or there's an element of man cannot live on bread alone. So that, you know, that we need things that are going to feed our minds and our hearts and even our imaginations. And one of the things about space travel, I don't know if you agree with me, Brother Robert, is that it appeals to that side of humanity which loves that idea of quest, of adventure.
Yes, I believe that we are really explorers at heart, or at least I am. Not everybody is, but there's a good number, a good portion of the population that is exploratory, and there is so much more to discover. This is a vast, wonderful universe that God has created for us, and I think we should learn as much as we can about it. And the best way to do that is to go there.
Yes, I mean, I think that it's probably, I mean, is it something, do you think, that's almost part of our DNA? Because, I mean, even the earliest tribes or whatever, they were wondering what's on the beyond the next hill, you know, who are those people living over on that island? Or what, you know, there's something within humanity that wants to keep questing and discovering. And in some ways, do you see that that's a kind of reflection of an inner quest for the truth?
I believe you might have a good idea of an answer there, that yes, we eventually, all of our seeking is towards God. As St. Ambrose said, our souls are restless until they rest in thee. And so we keep seeking eventually in our final reward, we will find what we're looking for. But in the meantime, there's a lot else to explore and to see as well.
Yes, both inward and outward. You're listening to the wise words of Brother Robert Mackey, coming to us live from the Vatican Observatory out in Arizona. And Brother Robert, are you okay for taking questions from our audience, some of which may be very scientific, some of which may not be?
I can give it a shot. Let's see what people have to ask.
That's the spirit, like the moonshot. You're going to give it a go. Give it a go and see where we end up. So listen, Brother Robert is a specialist in meteorites and asteroids and all that good stuff. But if there's any questions just generally about moon, about the Apollo missions, about the sense of going to the space and what it might mean and what it means for Catholics, that's the other thing. What reality, what importance does this have for us as Catholics, or is it just a sideshow? When we come back, we'll continue our fascinating discussion with Brother Robert, and you can be part of it. Give us a ring, 888-928-0881, or text me, and I'm happy to pose your questions on 251-928-2111. We'll be back straight after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. Welcome back to Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. And I'm in a fascinating discussion with Brother Robert Mackey from the Vatican Observatory, who's kindly joined us this morning all the way from the observatory out in Arizona. Brother Robert, a couple of questions for you from the audience. The first one is, it's asking, was the Bethlehem star a meteorite, an asteroid, or what was it?
Well, all we have for that is the accounts of the Gospels, and they don't really specify. There's a number of different traditions, and, you know, it's not something that I am ready to do any speculation on at this point. I have some ideas of what the scripture is trying to say there, but I think it's less important what it was astronomically as what it signifies. It signifies that the birth of Christ is a cosmic event, that this is not something that is simply a little mundane birth of a normal human being at some particular place and time, but this is God made man, God being incarnate. And it is something that the heavens proclaim with joy.
Yes, I think you're right. I think there's many different, in some ways, the astronomical aspects of it are fascinating and interesting and intriguing, but it's only partially the story there. We have another question. What proof is there for man landing on the moon? And I think you've probably had this question many times, Brother Robert. I mean, I know certainly in the last few years, there's been a lot of surveys done, you know, of polls done of populations. And I think that a few years ago, the British population was polled about the statement the moon landings were staged. And it was rather shocking, the number of people that thought that they were staged, but how this increased the younger the people got. Now, I think that's probably to do with the whole business of fake news and distrust of governments and all sorts of things. But what would you say? You're sitting on a plane and somebody says, Brother Robert, you're into all of this. Talk to me. How do I know any human being ever walked on the moon?
Well, I've actually personally met four of the astronauts that landed on the moon, and I've studied the missions quite a bit. So it is fairly undeniable, and all of the counter arguments, the arguments that that say we couldn't possibly have gone to the moon, all of them are based on a complete misinterpretation or misunderstanding of either the physics involved or the situation. But for me, one of the real pieces of evidence that I've actually held in my hand a number of times is, you know, in my research, I have actually worked with moon rocks, with several pounds worth of moon rocks. I've worked in the Lunar Receiving Laboratory at NASA Johnson Space Center doing some research on those moon rocks. And I can tell you they are genuine. They are actually from the moon. They are not Earth rocks. They're not meteorites either. They were actually collected by human beings who actually went to the surface of the moon and brought them back and stored them in this facility where I got the honor, the real privilege of handling them and working with them and working side by side with the people at NASA whose responsibility it is to take care of these things.
And I mean, when you meet these astronauts who've walked upon the moon, I mean, are they changed by that experience?
Well, I haven't had lengthy conversations with them, but I have to say they are consummate professionals, but they are also human beings, and they had some wonderful experiences. And you know, one of the people that I met happened to be Buzz Aldrin. And, you know, when he arrived at the surface of the moon, he was one of the first two people. He was on the Apollo 11, and he was there with Neil Armstrong, whom I also met. And, you know, he is a very Buzz Aldrin is a very religious man, and he's not Catholic, he's Presbyterian, but he's an elder in his church, and so he brought with him communion. And you know, every time I mention that in Catholic circles, people tend to erase it or eliminate it, because of course we are not in communion with the Presbyterians, and they don't hold the same sacramental interpretation of the Eucharist as we do. But the fact is, this was such a profound and important event for him that he had to celebrate it as a religious event. As he had, the first thing he did after he landed on the moon was he received his communion that he brought with him from the earth. And this, I thought, was absolutely marvelous and wonderful that he would mark this event with prayer. And I think that's something that we, because we're, I think, embarrassed by it, we Catholics, that it was this Presbyterian who did it, and we worry about the sacramentality of it, we tend to ignore it. But I think it's very important to acknowledge it and to recognize the importance of prayer in the adventure to go to the moon.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's very interesting what you're saying, Brother Robert, because, I mean, as I say, I grew up at that time in the midst of all the kind of excitement and also the, I suppose, what came across at that period of time was not so much what you're talking about as opposed to the triumph of science. Do you know what I mean? That somehow this was the triumph of the secular scientific worldview rather than any, and it was sort of a million miles away from anything that was religious, anything that was spiritual even. So I think, would it be too much to say that elements of the religiosity or otherwise of the astronauts or even of people at NASA has kind of been airbrushed out a bit, would you say?
I don't agree. In fact, the astronauts and the people at NASA are tend to be very strongly religious, or at least they have some very profound spiritual and religious experiences associated with the space program. I have a friend who is an anthropologist who studies this in particular and spends a lot of time working with astronauts and astronomers and various other people who are involved in space sciences and studying their spiritual and religious experience associated with space sciences, with their exploration of space. And almost to a person, whether they're religious or not, they do acknowledge and recognize and they speak about the profound spiritual experience of being in space or of exploring space.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me, but it's not something I don't think NASA would ever speak about or any official government would ever acknowledge in a way. I mean, it's not, as I say, I think on an individual level, of course, there's been a number of astronauts that have become very, very Christian. I think, was it Irwin that became very religious on his return to the Earth? And it was really, he said it was the experience of being on the moon or walking on the moon that had completely transformed him, but pointed him towards his Christian belief.
Yeah, I don't think NASA is attempting to cover it up or anything. I think it's not part of their mission to talk about
That's
it.
True.
And so,
That's true.
And they don't want to, being a government agency, they don't want to endorse any particular religious perspective. So they tend simply not to talk about it, but they're not attempting to cover it up or to pretend it isn't a religious or spiritual experience.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right answer there, Brother Robert. It's just something that's not part of their remit. But tell me this, what in terms of Catholics, I mean, there can be an element amongst our co-religionists which have no interest in the science and can't see the connection between what we're talking about this morning, astronomy, moon travel, all that sort of thing. They can't see the connection between that and our faith, our lived out faith in your local parish. Would you suggest to that individual that maybe they're missing out on something which could enhance their faith?
Well, let me tell you about the Vatican Observatory itself. It was founded specifically to be a sign to the world of the importance of people of faith, of the church itself, sponsoring astronomy, sponsoring the sciences, learning and understanding about this great universe of ours. Our motto, given to us by Pope Pius XII, is, or was it Pius XI? I forget. But our motto is Deum Creatorum Venite Adoremus. Come, let us adore God the Creator. And that is really what we do when we are studying science. For us as Catholics, our scientific work, obviously we do the same science as everybody else. We, you know, we publish in the literature, we have the same level of rigor. But the fundamental reason why is to adore God the Creator, to learn about the universe that God created, and in doing so, to worship God. So our science is a form of worship. And for people who say you can't do science and be faithful, you know, that's just incorrect. The faith is the fundamental reason why we do science. And that's certainly what gets me up in the morning.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, in some ways, you and we had Brother Guy on a few weeks ago, you both of you are living truths that that studying science doesn't mean that you go away from the faith or that you somehow become an atheist. It goes the other way, it seems, with people like you and Brother Guy.
Indeed. For us, you know, all of my life, you know, my parents are both devout Catholics, and you know, my father is a geologist, and you know, he always instilled in me both good, solid faith, you know, the need to go to church on Sunday, et cetera, and also to pray every evening. And at the same time, he would bring home books of science and books about the solar system and just anything that he could get his hands on, and encouraged us to really study the sciences. So, as well as other things, I have to say also.
Absolutely.
Specifically, you know, must study the sciences, but he encouraged let's put it that way.
I'm assuming then what you're really saying, Brother Robert, I mean, in a sense, the more you study the wonders of the universe, the more that you gaze onto the stars, does that increase your sort of wonderment at the glories of God, as the psalmist said? You know, does the firmament really declare his glory?
This is such a vast and amazing universe that I don't know how you can study it and not just be in awe, be amazed, and to connect that awe with the Creator who is responsible for this universe is really, you know, oftentimes in the day-to-day work of science, of course, it is, you know, it's work. It's, you know, you're in the lab, you're doing your stuff. But every once in a while, you just step back and acknowledge just how wonderful all of this is. And that's a time for Thanksgiving, to give thanks to God that I can do this work, that this universe is there to study, that it's accessible, that you know, it's not just some arbitrary thing that we can't understand, but it's something that we can learn about. We can learn how it works, where it came from, and that's just awesome.
Yeah, no, I think, and the Vatican Observatory is proof of that, you know, and we're so glad to have it, that it's there as a reminder to all Catholics and to all people of good faith you know, that this study of the stars is part and parcel of the wonderful gift of this world and indeed this universe that has been given to us and in which we live in, and that somehow the incarnation is part of all of this wonders that we perceive. The problem for a lot of us, though, and I include myself in this, Brother Robert, you probably picked up, is that I lack sometimes the tools, the means by which I can access some of that wonderment, you know, because not quite understanding some of the astronomical features or whatever you want to call them, it leaves a lot of us thinking, I kind of get it, but I'm not sure how to. But that's why you guys are there. Listen, we've run out of time, Brother Robert, believe it or not, and we've only sort of scratched the surface of this universe. So could you tell people more about where they can find out about the Vatican Observatory, but also maybe they can find out about some of your very interesting articles? I was reading your article about the last man on the moon this morning. It was very, very good. So do you want to just tell people where they can get hold of you and also more information on the observatory itself?
Yes, if you want to learn more about the observatory or even some of those principles of astronomy and such, and also faith and science, go to vaticanobservatory.org. That's all one word, vaticanobservatory.org. And that's a wonderful resource. There is a blog. There's faith and science resources on there. There's a chance to support our work financially, which we could really very much use that assistance as well.
Absolutely, because I'm assuming though that you're funded solely by the Vatican, or do you have other people, donors, and people who help you out?
Our work of the work of the Jesuits is funded by the Vatican, but the telescope itself actually depends very much on the generosity of donors, and so you can help support the work of the Vatican Observatory by helping us keep the telescope maintained and up to date.
That would be wonderful. So anybody interested, go over to vaticanobservatory.org and you'll find out more information there. And I also recommend Brother Robert's Half a Century Since the Last Man on the Moon. Fascinating article. Brother Robert, thank you so much for getting up so early and joining us today. And please God, you'll come back and join us another time.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Brother Robert Mackey from the Vatican Observatory. When we come round again, we shall be looking not heavenward, but heaven. We will be looking to the Lord God who looks after us all. We'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you're invited to join us right after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency.